How to do buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations podcast. Today is Thursday. It is the 15th of October. This is 2020. I have a limited time left to use that joke, so I'm going to continue to do it. I am your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, I have Andrew Orr. Hi, Andrew. Back again.
Hey, Kelly. I hope no one is sick of me because I'll be here tomorrow as well.
Don't call it a comeback, right? Also with me today, I have John Martellaro. Hi, John.
Hi. Nice to be here. Hi, Andrew.
Hey.
I don't get to have both of you on that often, and I've had you both like a couple times this week, and I'm very pleased about that. So, John, I'd actually like to start with you because you wrote an article yesterday that made me so happy because we saw a brief mention of Ceramic Shield during the iPhone 12 event, high speed, and after we saw that, I had many, many questions. And as always, when I have many, many questions, you go off and learn all there is to know about it. And then you write it down so everyone else can know, too.
In this case, the Ceramic Shield is Apple's name for a ceramic glass hybrid material technology that provides for a stronger, more robust, more durable display by a factor of 4 in drop tests.
Wow.
And you may wonder what's happening with something called a ceramic shield. It's not something that's laid over the glass. It's a modification to the glass.
Okay.
So a little bit of history. We're familiar with early glass on the iPhone. Mm-hmm. And it could crack. And then over the years, Apple worked with Corning on developing stronger, more durable, more scratch-resistant glass. Mm-hmm. It came to be known as Gorilla Glass, which is in its 7th generation.
Okay.
And the way Gorilla Glass works is that it's chemically hardened.
Okay.
But it's still glass. Now, glass is what's called an amorphous material. An amorphous material is when the atoms or the molecules don't line up. They're just scattered at random everywhere, and they don't have strong bonds between them. So think of it like a pillow.
Okay.
And it's formable and malleable and not real durable. There are other materials that have a rigid orderliness of their atoms that are tied together through atomic bonds.
Okay.
And these are called crystalline. And you can think of it as a solid Tinker Toy matrix. Mm-hmm. You put pressure on it and the bonds are stressed and the bonds keep the material rigid. And examples of crystalline material, things like steel, sapphire, diamonds, ceramics, and even table salt, which is an orderly structure to the matrix. Well, that provides a lot more strength, but that's not the way glass rolls. So what Corning's been doing for a long time now is trying to work on a heat pressure process where atoms of a metal, could be titanium or could be silver, are infused into the glass and allowed to form a crystallized matrix, which strengthens the glass and basically becomes a glass ceramic hybrid.
Okay.
Now, when you do this, by nature, the tendency is for the ceramic is to become opaque because the molecules or the atoms diffract light. So what you have to be doing is very, very careful to manage the process. And this is what probably took so long to achieve it. So that this glass ceramic hybrid is transparent and has the desirable optical qualities for a phone display. Now, there are examples of ceramics that are quasi-transparent. If you've ever gotten any of those Visions, Corning Visions cookware that are sort of transparent.
Yeah. Okay.
That's a ceramic. And so what Corning has been able to achieve is a transparent ceramic glass hybrid that is very strong and very durable. And as Apple says in their press release, increases the drop performance by 4 times, which is a considerable engineering gain. When you think about engineering gains these days, you think about 5, 10, 15% as being pretty nice. But to produce a drop performance by a factor of 4 is awesome, and it just goes to show you how good ceramics are. And of course, at a fraction of the cost of sapphire. Apple had a ill-fated adventure with GTAT in 2013 and 14. Remember when
we thought
they were going to do sapphire phone displays and they couldn't do it reliably, economically, and consistently?
Yeah,
meet quality standards.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So this is my question, because when I think of ceramics, I think of something that's opaque, and obviously your phone screen glass cannot be. So how is it ceramic but also clear?
That's a good question. That I found an article at Corning about the ceramic science, and I think it has to do with the way you seed it, with the kind of metal you use.
Okay.
But that's my guess. Now, you might have different seeding processes to create a ceramic that are not dependent on being transparent. For example, heat resistance, like a spacecraft heat shield, where you don't care if the ceramic is opaque or not. And so you can use materials that dissipate heat well. And those can be opaque. But if you don't have to worry about dissipating heat, then you have more design liberty, I'm guessing. Told you more than I know. To pick the material you're going to seed with to create this, to create the matrix, which provides strength, but does not necessarily provide any heat resistance over and above, you know, just the normal strength of the material.
Okay.
And that way you can achieve a transparent material. I think that's the trick. And it looks like they've succeeded brilliantly, because you want to have a desirable index of refraction so that when you're looking at your Dolby Vision video askew, you don't have optical effects.
Mm-hmm.
I did mention this in the article, but I'm just guessing that the index of refraction is something that you want to pay attention to.
Okay.
And of course, the eye transparency.
Yeah. And that was part of my question, because obviously Apple wants to make these durable enough that they will survive a drop, but also they want them to be durable enough that you don't need a case if you do drop it. Right. And so, like, that's why lots of people put their phones in cases. That's why I put my phone in a case. I am a dropper, kicker, thrower. And I don't want that to happen to my phone. I don't want to end up having to replace the screen. So I have sort of casually watched the Gorilla Glass stuff go by. And I'm interested to see how this ends up working in practical terms. Like, once once these new iPhones are out to everybody. Now, the other piece of this is that the ceramic shield glass is on every iPhone 12 model.
Yes,
correct?
It is. Okay. Every model.
Mm, okay.
All four.
So if you get a mini, if you get a pro, if you get a Pro Max, if you get an iPhone 12, whichever one you get, you will be getting this new improved glass. And it's just the front, right? Because the back's metal now, because we've gone to the new design, right?
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So it's going to be interesting to see how that shakes out once those phones are available. And that happens, as we talked about, that happens tomorrow morning. For some of the pre-orders. So if you want a 12 or a 12 Pro, that's tomorrow. And then, in 2 weeks.
The Mini and the Max, 2 weeks.
The Mini and the Max is 2 weeks from tomorrow. So we have an article about how to order over at the Mac Observer. I will make sure we have a link to that in show notes so that you can make sure that you are there, that you are in the right place, and more importantly, at the right time to make sure that you get a phone in a reasonable delivery window. And if that's the thing you're doing, then awesome. And also, because the iPhone orders go tomorrow, Andrew, we have a little time to talk to you about the cameras, because I know the camera's kind of your jam, and that was the thing that you were the most excited about with getting a new phone at all, was you were going to get a new camera. You didn't realize you had signed up quite for this, though, right?
Yeah. So I did my own deep dive exploring the four major features of these new cameras specifically it's the 12 Pro and the 12 Pro Max.
Uh-huh.
And so there's something that we talked about on launch day or the event day, which is sensor shift. Apple also mentioned something called Pro Raw. And then these two new Pros are getting LiDAR. And then finally, they will be able to shoot and record video in Dolby Vision. So just to give a quick rundown of what each of these mean. So sensor shift, as I mentioned, it's a type of image stabilization. So older iPhones, with my iPhone 7 Plus that I have right now, that's when Apple introduced optical image stabilization.
Yes.
Which means when you're taking a photo or video, your hands are probably like shaking and moving around a little bit. The lens moves in order to kind of counteract your shaking. And so that'll give you less blurry photos and smoother video. Now, sensor shift is a little bit different because now instead of the lens moving, the image sensor itself moves. The advantage of that is it's lighter than the lens. And so Apple says it's able to calculate the direction and speed of the shaking going on in real time. And move the sensor 5,000 times per second. In the other episode, I thought it was something like 180 times, but 5,000 is crazy.
Well, 180 doing anything 180 times a second was a mind-blowing number to me in the first place. And then you sent me a message later, and you said, I think I said 180, and it's 5,000. this is the kind of thing where your pictures will magically get better. And it's not necessarily because you got a new camera. It's because your camera is processing that image differently because of what it's not just like new glass or anything like that. It's really because your phone is doing more work on that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Now, speaking of the sensor, so the other thing that's changing with it is Apple's press release specifically mentioned the 12 Pro Max being 47% larger than previous models. I'm not sure if it's just in the Max or if it's with the regular 12 Pro as well. I wasn't really kind of sure on that. Right. It sounds like it might just be on the Max, though.
Okay.
So bigger is important in photography. As I mentioned in my article, you know, forget Samsung with its 108 megapixel camera.
Yeah.
The megapixels don't matter so much as sensor size because with a bigger sensor combined with a faster aperture, which is what these new phones also have, it's able to let in more light. Mm-hmm. And of course, capturing light is what a photo is all about.
Right.
So it's able to give you broader photos with less noise, more dynamic range. And so, as I mentioned, even the iPhone 6S in 2015 is when we moved from the 8 megapixel camera to the 12.
Yes.
And I don't know how many years later, 5 years later, we're still at 12 megapixels, but that's okay because the camera is still improving in other ways.
Yeah.
So Apple hasn't seen a need to go to maybe 16, for example.
Right. And honestly,
the problem, Andrew, with too many pixels is the dynamic range is smaller on a smaller pixel. So if you could go overboard and make too many pixels is too small.
Yeah.
And then your dynamic range is shot. So it's a trade-off.
It doesn't improve anything to do that. And the interesting thing about that.
And so like to compensate in that way, Apple has also made the pixels bigger.
Yeah. So that there's more data per pixel to make a difference when you affect something in a particular way. The interesting thing to me about mentioning that, Andrew, is that the 6S is sort of when I stopped thinking about my phone as a phone that could take pictures and more as a camera that could take calls. That's where the shift became like, this is my camera that happens to do other stuff. It was really with the 6S because noticing between the 5S and the 6S, the difference in my photos. And I have this handful of photos that I try to take every time I get a new phone, of different things that are, you know, very low lit, or there's a neon sign near my house that I used to like to take a picture of at night or like in twilight to see how this camera did compared to the one before. So I have like this little checklist of stuff I like to take a picture of and see how much better the picture is than it was, you know, three or four phones ago. And And that was one of the dramatic jumps was that was when I went from the 5S to the 6S, and then from the 8 to the 11 Pro was the other dramatic jump when I switched to the new camera. So that's part of what's interesting about this. The other piece that I saw that they were talking about is now that the new phones have LiDAR, that LiDAR is also part of what's going into your pictures, right?
Yeah, so the LiDAR sensor, also known as a time of flight sensor, it basically shoots a laser out in front of the camera. Mm-hmm. And it bounces back off whatever is in front of it, and then it calculates how fast it took. And this allows it to have a lot better autofocus in mm-hmm. both photo and video. And they mention, especially in low light conditions. So if you're doing a night shift photo, for example, LiDAR is going to help a lot, keep everything in focus. But then it's also good for augmented reality because it lets your phone more accurately measure its surroundings.
Mm-hmm.
And they showed that off with that some kind of medical thing, which was very impressive.
Yeah, it looks really cool. And I'm sort of hoping that, and I think we mentioned this on Tuesday, I'm hoping that having the LiDAR sensors more openly available, not just in the iPad Pro, is going to mm-hmm. allow people to do some cool stuff with it, whether that's augmented reality or just high-powered image processing in some way, like they're using it for, you know, low-light photography. Mm-hmm. I'm really curious where this could go as far as, like, turning the iPhone into yet another tool, right? Shifting it again from a camera that can take phone calls and send texts to, you know, some other particular sort of specialized device. I think that's going to be really cool. Now, John, you're getting the biggest one, right?
Yeah, I'm getting it mostly for the size, but I am going to appreciate the camera quite a bit.
All right. Also, Tuesday night, I appeared on Mac Voices. Hi, Chuck. And I did mention, Andrew, that you coined the phrase for the 12 Pro Max of the iPad Mini Mini, which, by the way, went over very well. And... like, because it is so big. Now, which one are you getting?
You know, despite that bigger sensor size, I think I'm going to stick with the 12 Pro.
Okay.
I think that's a good option for me.
Yeah, it's a nice size. Honestly, that's the part of it I like. You know, we talked about this in the morning meeting. John is a standard issue sized adult, and so John has standard issue sized adult hands. So the Pro Max to him is probably pretty great. I feel like it would be like an iPad Mini in my one hand, and sometimes I like to operate my phone in the hand I'm holding it with. So that doesn't always work for me. So plans have changed, by the way, for people who were following along with my sadness at not being able to get a 12. The sands have shifted, and I will be getting a 12. I'm going to get a 12 Pro and Pacific Blue for those checking their bingo boxes at home. The blue looks really pretty. So I'm going to be interested to see what the pictures look like, if I can still take them. Part of the reason that neon sign I mentioned earlier is not on the list anymore is because I believe that restaurant has now closed. And I'm not sure if they still light the sign up at night. And I hope they do because I really want to go take a picture of it now. as we mentioned, those phones, the Pro, and the 12 and the 12 Pro go on pre-order tomorrow morning if you're in the Western Hemisphere. It'll be tomorrow morning, 5 a.m. here, I believe, on Pacific time, and 8 a.m. East Coast. And then in 2 weeks, if you want the 12 Mini or the Pro Max, like John, you get to wait in that line 2 weeks from tomorrow. So, like I said, we have information about all of that over at MacObserver.com. You can look forward to more information there as we dig into the specs of these devices. And if you have feedback or if you have other questions about some of the stuff that is coming our way, you can get us at observations@macobserver.com, just like Bob did yesterday. Hi, Bob, from the Tucson Mac Users Group. And you can also get us at TMO Daily on Twitter and by leaving comments in the show notes. So thank you both for being here today. Andrew, thanks so much for just continuing to hang out in that panelist chair.
Yeah, thanks for having me. And I will talk to everyone tomorrow for Security Friday,
which I am looking forward to. Also, thank you for being here with us, John Martellaro.
Hey, nice to be here. Thanks for having me.
An unsolicited plug for John's show. If you're not listening to Background Mode, you should be. It's a great show. It's a lot of fun. And I'm not just saying that because he has me on regularly. I'm saying that because the episodes I am not on are spectacular. And you should definitely go check them out. I am your host, Kelly Gamont. I will talk to all of you tomorrow. In the meantime, be excellent to each other. And let's be careful out there.